Great job in reading, Dennis. Did you notice that there were some tongue twister words there at the beginning? And Dennis just went right through those without a hitch. Some of you may remember my Valentine debacle last year. If you don't, I want to remind you about it. Our daughter, who is a teacher in Tyler, Texas, has a teacher convention the week of Valentine each year. And last year, Arlene went down to stay with the children while they went to the convention. And she was there on Valentine's Day. So several days before Valentine's, I sent her a card. I mean, I'm no fool. I sent her a card. There may be some here tonight, I don't know, but I'm not. So I sent her this card. And she didn't get it. And so when our daughter got home, I said, when that card comes, you forward it here. And a week passed and no card. 2 weeks passed and no card. And several people, only one mattered, but several people thought that maybe I was just covering up and I hadn't sent a card at all. And after about a month, that card arrived. And I was vindicated. Well, this year, she's down there again. And I sent that thing 2 weeks ago. And it got there last Friday. So I'm in good shape for tomorrow. I want to ask you guys, are you in good shape for tomorrow? It is tomorrow, isn't it? All the women are shaking their heads yes, and the men going... I want to talk with you tonight about a great story of faith. We are people of faith, and we grow in our faith. There are times when I'm sure most of us wish that we had greater faith. And I'm impressed by the fact that during the personal ministry of Christ, His disciples came to him and said, Lord, increase our faith. No doubt all of us feel that need. A greater faith in God. Not just that he exists, though we must believe that, but that he is active in the world that he created. And that when he makes a promise, we can be assured that he follows through. That he will fulfill what he says and he will do what he promises. And the story I have in mind for tonight is a story of great faith. It's a man that believed that God is the ruler of the nations. And a God that was the ruler of Israel, and the God that followed through on what he promised to the nation. So let's divide our study into three parts tonight. And let's notice first a promise made. And the story begins in the 13th and 14th chapters of the book of Numbers. And I want to notice some important truths from these two chapters, and then we'll come to our text for tonight that is in Joshua chapter 14. The book of Numbers is an account of God's dealing with the children of Israel while they were at Mount Sinai. Now, Bible students understand that the nation of Israel was born in slavery in Egypt. God had made a promise to Abraham that a great nation would come from him. But he also promised that that nation would spend 400 years in Egypt. And so Abraham had a son whose name was Isaac, and Isaac had a son whose name was Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons who became the heads of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and so his sons were the sons of Israel. Israel means Prince of God. And Jacob's life was characterized by a lot of ups and downs. But as we follow the dealings of God with Jacob, the day came when he lived up to his name. He was a Prince of God. And because of a great famine that occurred in the land of Canaan, where Jacob lived, the whole family, about 70 in number, moved down into Egypt. You may remember that one of the sons, Joseph, had been sold by his brothers because of their jealousy of him as a slave into Egypt. And Egypt had been the land of Joseph's living for a number of years. And he rose with the blessing of God to be second only to Pharaoh. But that's another story. So when the famine arose, Jacob and all his family moved down into Egypt. And there, over the next many years, the nation developed just as God had said. But not only did God promise that he would see that that nation grew, but he promised that he would deliver them. And the deliverer was Moses. Moses had been born in Egypt, had been saved from the wrath of the Pharaoh of Egypt, had grown up in Pharaoh's palace as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But then, under less than good circumstances, he left Egypt at the age of 40. He spent the second 40 years of his life in the wilderness out around Mount Sinai, where he met a family and became a shepherd of sheep that didn't belong to him. And at the conclusion of that second 40-year period, God appeared to Moses in a burning bush and announced to him that he was to be the leader who would deliver the children of Israel from Egyptian bondage. So Moses went back into Egypt and for the next 40 years was the leader of God's people. By the power of God and under the leadership of Moses, the nation was delivered from Egypt. It passed miraculously through the Red Sea when God parted the waters. And they came to Mount Sinai, a mountain in Arabia. And they camped at Mount Sinai for about a year. During their stay at Mount Sinai, God gave through Moses to Israel the law that we know as the law of Moses, the Old Testament law, the heart of which were the Ten Commandments. He also gave to Moses instruction about building a tent of meeting, a tabernacle, where God said, "I will meet the nation." The tabernacle represented the presence of God among the people. There were elaborate furnishings in the tabernacle, an elaborate priesthood that served around the tabernacle, and an elaborate sacrificial system. And all that was established at Mount Sinai. And after about a year at that mountain, God gave instruction to Moses to move out. And they moved up toward the promised land of Canaan and came into a wilderness called Paran. And from there, God gave some instruction. And we'll read about it in the 13th and 14th chapters of the book of Numbers. God said to Moses, choose one leader from each of the 12 tribes. Send those 12 men as spies into the land to see that it is all that I said it was. And Moses obeyed the Lord, and the 12 tribes, the 12 spies were sent. When they went into the land, they found that it really was a rich land flowing with milk and honey. It was the time of the harvest of the grapes, and they cut some grapes from the vine, and the cluster was so big that it had to be carried on a pole by two men. And they brought that cluster of grapes back when they gave their report. They also noted that the cities were walled cities. That meant that it would be difficult for them to take the country. And they noted further that the land was filled with giants. And in a day of hand-to-hand combat, that would be difficult as well. So when the spies come back with their report, they say the land is everything that God said it was, but it's filled with walled cities and filled with giants, and we can't take it. It's interesting that later, when God was speaking through Joshua and they were entering into the promised land, that God said, I have given you these cities. But then he stipulated as to how they were to accept the gift. You know, they could have said, if they had reasoned like some of us today, well, Lord, if you've given us the cities of this country, hand over the keys. But that wasn't the way it worked. God said, I've given you the city. These cities are gifts from me. This land is a gift from me. But if you're to possess it, then there's something for you to do. And you must go in and drive the people out. You see, a gift is not a gift until it's accepted. And a gift from God is accepted upon God's terms. Salvation is like that. It is a gift of God. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9 tells us that. But that doesn't mean that man is inactive in his salvation. He responds to God in obedience. So the spies come back. And they say, this land is too much for us. We cannot take the walled cities, and we cannot defeat the giants. But two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, said, let us go up at once and possess it, for the Lord is with us. Did not the Lord promise to give us the land? Then we can possess it. Let us go up at once and possess it. But the people's response was, would we have died in Egypt? Would we have died in the wilderness? Have you brought us out here so that we could die by the sword? And our wives and our little ones suffer. And the people said, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Now, can you imagine that? They would rather have been in slavery than to trust God to help them take the country. We want to appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. And Moses, their leader, And Aaron, his brother, the high priest, fell on their faces before God. And there's an interesting line at the end of the people's response. Verse 10 of Numbers chapter 14 says, "Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel." Now that must have been a daunting sight. The glory of the Lord appeared. And here's what the Lord said to Moses. He said, "Moses, I'm going to destroy this people. And I'm going to make of you the great nation that I promised." It's not the only time that God threatened to destroy that nation, because from the beginning they had been murmuring, complaining, and disobedient people. "Moses, get out of the way. I'm going to destroy the people." And Moses did what may seem to be a strange thing. He made intercession for the people before God, and this is his intercession. He said, "Lord, if you destroy this people, word is going to come to the Egyptians that you destroyed them. And they're going to say that the Lord did not have the power or the ability to bring the people into the land that he promised them, and so he destroyed them in the wilderness. So he must be weak." Now, in a very real sense, the reputation of God is on the line here. I mentioned earlier today that when God trusts us, and he does, you know, but when God trusts us, he takes a risk. And the risk is, will we follow through as he wants us to? And here in the wilderness, God's reputation is on the line. Will God do, or can he do, what he promises? Didn't he say he would bring the people into the land? Well, he destroyed them in the wilderness. He couldn't do it. And God relented. I'm convinced that had Moses not intervened, God would have destroyed them, and he would have done as he said, raised up another nation. But Moses intervened, and God relented. But God said, "All of this generation, all of these people that came up out of the land of Egypt who were above 20 years of age are never going to see the land. They're going to perish in the wilderness. And then their little ones, the ones they said would be slaughtered by the people of the land, their little ones I will bring into the land, and they will possess it." And a plague went out from the Lord and destroyed those 10 spies who gave the bad report. The God of Scripture is a God of goodness, of mercy and grace and compassion. Moses notes that in his intercession for Israel. But God is God, and rebellion against God is a serious matter. And he destroyed those 10 spies with a plague. And then they began that time of wandering in the wilderness. But at that time, God made a promise to Joshua and Caleb. And he said that he would keep Joshua and Caleb alive The only two above 20 years of age who came out of Egypt who would go into the promised land. He said he would keep them alive. And he would give to them the inheritance that he promised to Israel in that land. There's the promise made. Now when we come over to the book of Joshua in chapter 14. The promise is remembered. 45 years have passed. And that's a long time to remember a promise, isn't it? 45 years have passed. And the children of Israel are ready to have the land divided among them. And Caleb remembers the promise of God. We learn from the text that Joshua was 40 years of age when he was one of the spies who went into the land. And now 45 years have passed. And as the land is about to be divided among the people, Caleb reminds Joshua of the promise that God had made 45 years earlier. And in the 14th chapter of the book of Joshua, at verse 8, Caleb says, "Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt." That is, those 10 spies came back with the bad report and the people were discouraged. "But I, Caleb, I wholly followed the Lord my God." What does it mean to wholly follow the Lord my God? It means that Caleb had fully, completely, and faithfully followed God all those 45 years. He never forgot what God had promised. And he never ceased to be faithful to the Lord during all those years. "I wholly followed the Lord." And second at verse 10 he said, "And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive." He's kept me alive for these 45 years. "And now I am 85 years old." And yet he said, "I am as strong now as I was then." That's quite a statement, isn't it? I'm as strong now as I was then. And I know that this land that the Lord promised me is filled with giants, but I'm able to drive them out with the Lord's help. And so in verse 12, he said, "Now therefore, give me this mountain." Remembering the promise for 45 years, he says, "All these years I've fully followed the Lord. For all these 45 years I've remembered the promise. The Lord has blessed me and been with me. Now give me this inheritance and I will go in." You see, Caleb didn't believe that he would just go over on the side of the mountain, sit down, and wait for the Lord to pour his inheritance into his hands. He knew there was something for him to do. And what he was to do was to engage the enemy and drive them out. And the fact that Caleb understood that he needed to receive God's gift by active obedience in driving the enemy out did not make it any less a gift from God, did it? It was still the gift from God. But God set the standard as to how the gift would be given. And Joshua would become a man of battle and would obey the Lord in driving out the enemy. So he remembered the promise. And God was good on the promise. As the story unfolds in the book of Joshua, Caleb did engage the enemy. And he did defeat them, even though they were, from a human standpoint, mightier than he was. But Caleb had God on his side. And he had the promise of God behind it. And he knew he'd be victorious, and he was. Now let's come to the third part of the study and notice the promise claimed. What was there about Joshua, and what is there in his story, and the story of Caleb? What is there that sets them apart? Why are they preserved in biblical history and held up to us so that we might learn from them? And the answer, quite simply, is that it is because of the kind of people they were. And I want to suggest some words that describe Caleb on this occasion. And the first of those words is faithfulness. In our service to God, we are imperfect people. There aren't any other kind. But we can be and must be and will be faithful. We can make our goal in life to do the will of God, and we often are going to fall short of doing that will perfectly, but the desire of our heart is to do the will of God. Now, if that's not where we are, then there's something that is lacking in faithfulness. But where we are, where we must be, is we want to do the will of God. There is a line later in Israel's history that has arrested my attention on more than one occasion. And it was when Solomon was building the temple in Jerusalem. You may remember that David, his father, wanted to build a temple for God, a permanent structure, not like the tent, the tabernacle that they had in the wilderness, but a permanent house for God in Jerusalem. And God wouldn't let David do it. He said, I'm going to let your son do it. But you can't. I'll let you gather the materials together. And David did that. And God gave a pattern or a plan for the temple to David, which he passed on to Solomon. But Solomon did the actual building. And when Solomon was dedicating the temple to the service of God, there is a line in his speech at the dedication that is about David, his father. And Solomon said, the Lord told my father David, it was in your heart to build the temple, and I didn't let you do it. But here's the line. God said, David, it was good that you wanted to. It was good you wanted to. There may be a lot of things that we would like to do for the Lord that we'll never be permitted to do, but it's good that we wanted to. And even though we do not serve God perfectly, we can want to. And there's a difference in the man who tries and fails than the man who says, I'm not going to try. Because one is faithfully serving the Lord and the other is not. Now, please note that in faithfulness, though we are imperfect and we fall short of the goal of perfection, we're not talking here about rebellion against God. To know the will of God and to deliberately say, I'm not going to do that, is not faithfulness. Faithfulness is to seek to do what God asks us to do. And Caleb was faithful to God. He was faithful before the promise, and he was faithful afterward. But for these 45 years, he remembered the promise of God, and he claimed the promise. And through all of that time, he remained faithful to the Lord. That was the second word. Through 45 years, Caleb persevered. He refused to give up. Others may quit, but he wasn't going to quit. And when he claims the promise, he's 85 years of age. Did you know that there is a time in our work when we retire? And some of you are retired. That's a good thing. There is never a time to retire from the service of God. Caleb's 85 years old. He isn't retiring from the service of God. He's going to claim his promise, and he's ready to act. It's really a sad thing, isn't it? If somebody gets to the place in the service of God, they say, well, I've done mine, and I'm going to coast now. Or worse yet, to serve God through the years and finally come to the place where, for whatever reason, they just decide to become unfaithful to God. There is somewhere along the line the lack of perseverance, continuing and never giving up. I suppose that the most famous lines that come down to us from the period of the Second World War from Winston Churchill are these. Britain was under the Nazi attack by air, the Nazi Blitz, as it was called. And a lot of people gave up hope. Churchill didn't. He was invited to come to America to deliver a commencement address at an American university. And when he arose to speak, here is his speech. Never, never, never give up. And he sat down. Nobody ever forgot the speech, because he was encouraging what he practiced, perseverance. I had a good friend for many years, 40 years, I suppose, who was an Englishman. You might have heard me mention the name Albert Winstanley at one time or another. A great preacher of the gospel. I was told by more than one that he was the greatest preacher in Britain. I asked him, where were you during World War II? He said, I was living in London. You were there during the Blitz, yes. I said, how much do you think, now this is an opinion, of course, how much do you think Churchill meant to Britain holding out against such odds? And you know, without a moment's hesitation, he said, 80%. 80%. One man, 80% responsible for not giving up because he persevered. And Caleb was a man who persevered. Don't give up, no matter what. The storms of life will come, and sometimes you may wonder why. You may wonder why God doesn't do more. If God is listening, if God is seeing, but no matter what, never give up. Caleb persevered. Now, the reason that Caleb persevered and remained faithful was because he believed. He believed. That's our third word. He believed. He believed in the God who promised. And he believed in the God of power. And he believed in the God who was faithful. And because he had that understanding of God, he was faithful. And he persevered. And then fourth, Caleb demonstrated his faith. He had some real strong beliefs. And he demonstrated his faith by acting on his conviction. You know, it's one thing to say, I believe something. It's something altogether different to act on it. To have enough conviction to carry through what faithfulness demands. Through the years, I've known a lot of people who talked good religion. But when it came to action, they were mysteriously absent. Caleb carried through with his conviction. And so he says, the Lord made this promise. Now give me this mountain, and with the Lord's help, I will subdue the enemy. He acted on his conviction. And the last word is victory. Because when a man of faithfulness and perseverance, a man like Caleb, believes what God has revealed about himself, and he's motivated to act upon his conviction, that person is assured of the ultimate victory. It is called a victory of faith. So when God makes a promise to us, we can believe it because he's faithful who made it. And he lacks no power in fulfilling it. In Matthew 6:33, there is a great promise. Seek first the kingdom of God. And everything you need will be added to you. God will do that to people who seek first the kingdom. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, as Paul is motivating the Corinthians to give to the work of God of their financial resources, he told them how they were to do it, and then he said, for God is able to make all grace abound toward you, so that you, having an abundance of all things, can be fruitful in every good work. I've had several brethren tell me through the years, that doesn't really mean that. And because they didn't believe that it really means that, they didn't do what God asked them to do, and they didn't get what God promised. No man should ever question the promise of God in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 until he tries it for at least a year. I've tried to teach my children how to give. And I know it's difficult for young couples. They have a house payment, and they have a car payment, maybe two, and they have children that they're trying to educate and provide for, and I know it's difficult. They may be making less than they ever make in their lives, and it's hard. But I've always told my kids, don't give to God what's left. You set aside what you are going to give to God first. And what you have left will assure that you will do better on what's left than you would if you hadn't given to God. I believe that, by the way. And I've tried it, and he's never failed. It's a great promise. God will carry through with it. In 1 Peter 3, verse 12, there's another promise from God in which he says, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open to their supplication. And in conjunction with that, there's James 5, 16, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. There's power in prayer. It's an amazing thing that one person who is right with God says the name Father and the Creator, the Sustainer of the universe, stops and listens and responds. But it's the promise of God. He's faithful to his promise. And you can claim the promise. He asks us to be righteous. And then he will work in our lives and he will answer our prayers. But I asked for something and God didn't give it. Maybe it was against his nature. He isn't going to violate his nature. Maybe it was against his will. We do not know everything, but he does. Or maybe he said, wait. And if it's important to you, just keep laying it before God. He teaches us to do that as well. But sometimes, as a loving father, we will ask for something and he will say no. But no is an answer. And then there's Romans 8 and verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good. All things, good things, bad things, all work together for good to them that love God and to them that are called according to his purpose. You can count on that one. Bad things happen to good people. There are many wonderful promises that God gives us as his children. But one of those promises does not happen to be, if you're a Christian, nothing bad will ever happen to you. We're not exempt from that. We live in a fallen world, and bad things do happen to good people. But God promises that in the good and the bad, he will be at work and will bring ultimate good out of every situation. And you can trust him on that one. I don't know a lot about Caleb, but I sure do like him. I like him because he stood with Joshua when the others did not. I like him because he remembered God's promise for 45 years. And I like him because when the opportunity came, he said, no matter what the obstacle, no how unlikely is the victory, God and I make a majority, give me this mountain, and I'll drive out the giants, and I will possess my possession. Let's try to be people of faithfulness. And let's persevere. Let's determine. We're never going to quit. We're never going to give up. And it's because of this underlying deep faith that we have in God. And we not only will talk about our faith, but we will live out our convictions. And when we get those things right, the ultimate victory is ours as well. It's great to be a Christian, isn't it? It's great to belong to God and to know that we can trust Him no matter what. If you're not a child of God, you need to be in a right relationship with Him. And then all the promises of God become your promises. And He who fulfilled the promise to Caleb, albeit it was 45 years later, will fulfill His promises to you. If we could help you tonight, you come. Let's stand and sing.